Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, recording from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to have you joining us this balmy afternoon. Well, I don't know what it's like in here, but...
Hey, it's hot here.
Yeah, maybe it's just... Yeah, it's hot. It is hot in here.
Did you say balmy?
Yeah, balmy, yeah.
I know what that means, but it's just wrong, man.
It's not the right way to say it?
I don't like balmy.
Dang, okay. All right, I'll keep that in mind. All right, here we go. To be honest with you, I'm not quite sure what we're doing on the show tonight, and I'll tell you why. So I was reading some articles today, like trying to look for stuff that we could do on the show, and I was telling Boova when I got in here, they all look stupid. I mean, they look dumb, and I don't, I'm trying to decide, like, is it because we've been doing this quite a while, right? And it's not like there's not a ton of interesting things to talk about in the world, but, I get most of my stuff, so like, I'll go out to Christian Post and like the Christianity Today and Relevant Magazine, just try to get an idea of what a broad swath of, I don't know, Jesus thought might be happening in the world.
Right.
And for the life of me, I'm reading these articles, I'm like, dumb, dumb, probably heresy, dumb, dumb, survey, dumb, you know, and it's like, what's the right way to describe this? It is a periodical of milk, is what it is. It's a periodical of milk, right? It's a bunch of people who, I'm not going to say that yet because I think it's part of my conclusion. But here's a question that I had, that I asked Boova before the show started. So if we look out at all the stuff that we've read and done and talked about over, say, the past 6 or so years, the question is, what are the common themes here, right? Like either what are the common themes of what it's trying to describe about a Christian culture? What are the implications by the types of stories that are showing up here? What is it trying to say about us or Christianity or America or whatever, through some of these stories? And like, can we come up with some kind of broad themes here and then evaluate, like, is this an accurate picture of what American Christianity is or what following Jesus looks like or the things we're actually struggling with? Or are there caricatures in here? Are these facades? Are these false pictures? Are they exaggerated pictures? Like, what are the themes? Okay. So we're going to spend a little bit of time on that today. And we're going to see where that takes us. Cause I mean, hopefully it should end up in a fine synopsis that changes the world. And then after that, we got some Dear Life in the Path. And then here's the deal. If all's right in the world, I'm going to let you out early. Okay.
Yeah.
You can get some of your time back. Use it proactively. You know, talk to your wife, you know, something like this. Buy some flowers. Here's the deal. Clean the fridge. You know, you don't clean the fridge very often.
Oh, take
all
the truth.
Take it all out. I mean, and take out the sliders, take out the mustard, take off the bars of where you keep the milk or whatever it is, and you scrub that thing down.
That's the truth.
You think that you won't notice the difference, but I mean, you will shamelessly admire the inside of that fridge for the next 3 weeks.
That, and there's a chance, depending on how dirty and gross it is, there's a chance your food will taste different.
Like, that's true.
Like, if you have a real grody fridge, right? And like, you haven't cleaned that thing out in 10 years. Or actually, you haven't cleaned that thing out since you bought it. There's a chance that there is some funk on your veggies that you thought was just what carrots taste like. But you are incorrect. Carrots are delicious and sweet naturally. You have a funk that's in that fridge. Clean that out, bleach it out if you need to. You need to take the drawers out and soak them in hot water overnight. No one's going to judge you. It's your own home.
Yeah.
But seriously, clean that thing out and there's a chance your food will taste better.
Yeah. Yeah. Laundry and cleaning out the fridge is the same thing. You take your drawers out, you right. scrub them down before you put them back to use. That's the deal.
Oh, man.
I can't too. Every time I've probably cleaned the fridge, I don't know how long have I been in my current house, maybe 7 or 8 years, 7 years. And, I think I've cleaned the fridge maybe 3 times. I mean,
right?
Full on taking everything out. And I swear every time I clean the fridge, I get about half an hour into it and I think, who the hell is buying molasses? Where are we getting this molasses?
And why does it always spill?
Yeah. Why can't it, like, it pours out slow as nothing when I want to use it. Okay.
You could catch it as it opens
that's
up.
That's right. It flows like a river in there. And then here's the thing. Of course, there's no evidence of molasses. So something is tag team with something else in there, come together and decided to hold firm. See, I mean, I got a razor blade in my fridge trying to get stuff off the bottom of it, or a paint chisel, or something else.
Yeah, when you can start carbon dating the barbecue sauce that's at the bottom, there is a problem, and you have not cleaned right. it in a reasonable amount of time.
You're taking off the food puddles in geological layers. There's like a topography to the bottom.
I'm pretty sure this is sandstone. No, sweetheart, that's mayonnaise.
I eventually get the razor blade because you start. I got a steel wool, or I think it's, we have stainless steel, right? So I'm scrubbing stuff off, and you can tell, like, that is not, that's like layer number three. These things came in shifts and lodged here and formed like a canyon. That's the broccoli, like, guy, they go visit it like twice a year. Man. Hey, look at that.
That's nasty. So, yeah, when you're playing guess that condiment, don't taste it. Just don't do it.
Hey, okay, well, one other thing on the fridge, though. For some reason, there is, what is it? There's like always one potato that I feel like has lived in there for 10 years. He's the ancient of the potatoes.
It's got a whole potato plant over it.
But he's everybody else is like shriveled up and died, and he's holding court with a beard and a staff somewhere in the back of the crisper.
Some ancient, like, sage potato that's just hanging out. Like, you could never get rid of me. Oh, that's the truth.
I'm always afraid he's like the Jim Jones of the potatoes. Like, they all died. And then he watched it all and said, you know what? Nope.
Yep.
I've got 10 eyes and I saw them all folk die.
Exactly. I think I'm all right. I don't need to do that.
All right. Hey, in case you landed on the wrong podcast, you're listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. So big question, Bubba.
Yep.
It went 6 years, I think. Maybe seven.
Yeah, I think closer to seven.
Maybe longer. Who knows? I'm not keeping track of stuff. We've been picking up articles, looking in the news and saying, hey, what are people talking about? Slightly relevant to Jesus culture. All right. And so the question is, are there any big themes here, big synopses, common threads that we can take away from these years and years worth of stories as I look upon them today and think, stupid, stupid, stupid.
Right.
What do you got?
All right. So
you go and then we'll trade them.
List for list or one by one?
One by one.
Okay. So the first one, that I have that I've seen for years, and this rears its head differently and in different, manifestations, but, the concept of, how do we, as Christ followers, turn our perceived morality based off of our religion and our following Christ into laws? Okay?
Yeah, okay, yep.
And when that ultimately fails, how do we react?
Right, right. How do we put a fence around people, and then when they break out or they disregard the fence, how do we contain our anger?
Exactly, right? It's the whole concept that we think that if we're trying to win people over for Christ, rather than actually going out and doing it the way that Jesus describes and the way that the whole Bible looks at it from a heart perspective and looking into that, we go and try and change our society. We try and change our government, and we say, you know, this is a wrong moral issue, so we're going to pass a law about it. And you're not going to agree with the morality behind it, but you still should abide by this law, and we think it should pass. And then ultimately, when that fails within our society, which so often it does, how do Christ followers react? How should we react to that? And was it a problem in the first place? Was it an issue that we were tackling, that we were trying to take the lazy way out, which I'm full well able to say that I think it's the lazy way out, where we are saying, rather than going and winning the hearts of men and women in the world and hearts of men and women in our society and truly speaking to them about Christ and living that out for them to see, rather than doing that so that it's transformative within them, we're going to do something to where we're passing legislation so it's transformative within our government and our society rather than its people.
Yeah, so I would agree that there's the consistent theme across articles and I think fairly within the culture and within the church is false wins. Right? The wrong definition of what a success is.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, did I tie a man's hand behind his back so that he doesn't steal? Win.
Right.
And only did I tie his hands behind his back while he was in my presence. Right?
Right.
Or when he was around someone long enough to be ashamed of himself or whatever, mm-hmm. right? It's a win because there are 500 people in our church. It's irrelevant that 50 people have been baptized and 30 of them actually know who Jesus is
right.
and have changed, you know, something changed about them. It's a false win. It's a, this person agrees with me most of the time and I think they might vote for things that I want. So I'll vote them in.
Right.
Even if their core basis is corruption. Right? Like it's a false win. It's not a win. It's like we're settling. Yeah, we're settling for things, and we're waving a flag at like embarrassing victories.
When we know how amazing and transformative God is.
Yeah, right. Ooh, but Boova, so that's the prime issue, right? We degrade the understanding of the greatness of the good news that passes and the Savior that dies for it and the God that brings it because we're willing to settle for crappy, shifty, shallow definitions of things so that we can wave a banner to who? The Almighty who freaking knows the difference?
Right.
Who will look at it and say, you know, it's not taking up the cross and following me. That's, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, that's getting Rome to stop crucifying.
Yeah, right.
And that's not ultimately fixing any issue. And you're absolutely right. You know, ultimately what we're doing is we're belittling the work of God, and we're belittling the power of God by saying, God, we believe in you. We wholeheartedly want to follow, who you are, at least on paper. And we really want our society to look like you, but we're not willing to believe and agree and live out the fact that you are powerful. You are transformative. And if we really want to affect something, you're the best way to do it, but we're going to throw that to the curb and we're going to say the best way to do it is on paper, on a bill, and through Congress or through whoever we elect into office. And in some way, shape, or form, that's going to change us better than your ability to take over people's hearts.
Yeah. So the real struggle here is that some of these things are at a core, a basic Christian morality, which is otherwise beneficial for the world, carte blanche, right? So to the extent that I don't want people killing each other, and I think that we should have laws that restrain that, and we don't have people making off with other people's property, both Hammurabi and the Lord Jesus agree, these things you shouldn't be doing, okay? So, yeah, I think the Christian worldview is beneficial. I will vote for it. People that are acting consistent with the Bible, absolutely.
Right.
But the thought process, we've abdicated. That's the shift, right? We've abdicated the thought of putting our time and effort into altering the societal morality as if that implicitly is, if that makes disciples.
Right.
Right. So if I want to keep a man from harming himself and I support laws that do that, people from destroying themselves and destroying other people, I'm for that to the extent that it buys time that we can otherwise, help them hear good news and see their lives change,
right?
But like, it is the imbalance of effort. It's the imbalance that pushes to say, you don't change the world to the good news of the legislation. You change the world to the good news of Jesus Christ. However, I support legislation if it retains a man's property and livelihood and life long enough so that he may yet hear the good news.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with supporting good legislation, and I don't think that's the hair we're trying to split here. Like that's nothing that's a problem. And I think that it's good that that there are wholesome people that are trying to make it so that our government and our society and our legislation system follows in line with good moral tenets, and I think that's a good idea. But when we let that be our outpouring of our work within Christ versus the actual outpouring of the work within Christ of affecting people and affecting change for good from the perspective of Jesus rather than human legislation, I think that's the hair that I am willing to split. And I think that we're not even splitting hairs. That's a huge difference.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think the core of that is does it have its place? Is there a functionality to it? Is there an important function for those things in our society? Absolutely. But when we are, that is where we are wholly invested or even majorly invested, to see the world change around us. How often am I, and here's the deal, I'm not a door-to-door evangelism dude. I have trouble, there's people that have success on it. Maybe my mind needs to change on it, but like, I have trouble seeing that it's effective. Because we'll call those wins because I put a knocker on your door, not because you actually, you know, follow Jesus.
Right.
How much time did you spend, you know, lobbying for a candidate or for a party or for a bill or put a sign in your yard or whatever? Again, that's actually just as much of a false win. I think you have as much ability to convince someone else to vote for, you know, Chuck Johnson with a sign in your yard as you do convince them to love Jesus because you put a sign in your yard.
Right.
But in either case, where's your balance? Like, where are you actually finding hope in? And I don't mean just desperate hope because your political play didn't work. Because that's usually what we do is like, oh, I voted for this this person, everything's going to change, everything's going to be great. And then when they get in office and things don't change and aren't great because it's the same power corrupts power. And then you go, well, at least I have faith in the Lord Jesus. Right. I'm like, you know, you wouldn't have been in this despairing mess and put all your hope in the wrong spot had you got the balance here right. And I mean imbalance, which is balance more towards, the shift is more towards Jesus, less towards other things. But understand that those things have their place in a life of following Jesus. Okay, so I would agree with that, Bubba.
Okay.
I think that's true. And we can't get that right. And then we don't know how to, it's feast or famine, right? Either things are going the way we want and we're like, yay, we finally stopped those bastards who are doing the things we hate. And then, you know, 3 years down the road, now we're like, look what those bastards did to us. We're suppressed and we don't have anything to do with ourselves.
Constant self-victimization.
It's the internet. Okay, so here was mine. Here was number one on my list.
All right, let's hear it.
The implication of the stories that we read is that no Christians in any station of life know how to live that part of life at all and never have, except for one hipster somewhere who has access to the web.
Oh, man. Okay. So I've seen that. We see that way too often. People have so many questions and so many failures in weird places, and I think ultimately, if I can draw what a possible root of the problem is, I think we have a culture of believers that are not willing to use their resources correctly. To be really lame about saying that, I mean that from the perspective of, first off, if you're going through something in your life, there's a chance someone else already has, right?
Right.
And whether that be from an instruction perspective within the Bible, that the Bible does talk about things, and I get that the Bible does not specifically mention, like, Twitter, and we don't know how to, you know, deal with abortion clinics based off of, like, specifically what is in the Bible.
Yeah.
We can still draw from what's in that book on how to live life. We can still draw on how to do certain things, at least set up a funnel of, you know, does it hit this roadblock? If so, get it out. And if not, great. And does it hit this? And then we don't use our resources correctly within. There are people who are believers in Christ that have gone through things that we are currently going through and probably know how to deal with it. And we can't figure out how to just go, hey, I'm in a place where, you know, I've got two daughters and I don't know what to deal with this because they just started dating and I'm a dad that I've never been through this. Go to your church or go somewhere. There's a chance that there's a dad that goes, yeah, I have 11 daughters.
Yeah.
The good Lord gave me 11 of them. Let me tell you step by step how I dealt with each and every one of them.
Right.
And I don't think that's the ultimate fix, but it's certainly a start to where we use the church not just as a building, but we use the church within the perspective of community.
Yeah.
And we actually use each other and lean on each other for accountability and guidance and wisdom and have mentors set up for ourselves. And, hey, you've gone through this. How do I do this? And how can I live through this? It's this weird thing about how we think that because we're saved by God means that we have to have this all figured out, and it's somehow below us to ask for help or to seek that out, when God's book is all about instruction. And I mean, huge people within the Bible are constantly like, hey, learn from this deal, learn from this kind of stuff, teach me your ways. David has Psalms that talk about just teaching. Right. Use your instruction, teach me your statutes, all this different stuff. And I think we are failing ourselves by not reaching out correctly to try and figure this out. And ultimately, then we have this culture of, we can't figure out how to live life. Right. Yet we are going out and telling people the good news of Jesus and how to live life, but yet we can't figure out as a society to live any part of it.
No, yeah. It's so like, it creates an opportunity where, like, I could see a title that says seven things you're doing wrong as a dad, and I might be able to buy into them. Like, you know what? Maybe I am completely failing as a dad. Like, that's the core of not having not using our resources, not reading the Bible for wisdom and letting it change your life, not using the community around you, is that you can actually be convinced that someone has written an article that explains to you that you might have been doing everything wrong, even though you look around and like, well, there's no actual evidence to any of that stuff.
But I should change everything I'm doing.
Right. Because, like, if I go back through the articles that we've even talked about in the last 2 years,
uh-huh,
I might be able to say, okay, I don't know how to live in my 20s. I do not know how to be a dad. I have no idea how to be a husband. Luckily,
yep,
this guy's got seven ways to solve that problem.
Yep.
I don't know how to make disciples. I have no idea how to explain people about the death of Jesus. And I got the facts all twisted up and ganked up and I can't say it right. And right, like we can keep the most disappointing thing about the continuance of those lists is the implication that we can be drawn into those because we are not so confident that I would look at the list and say, whatever it is, man, I don't need it.
Right.
It doesn't have to be that in a pompous way. It's just to say, like, there's no way that my life is so jacked up and I missed Jesus and community and everything so completely that I need this guy's 7 points to change my life.
Right.
So if we're so far separated though from that identity that's there, or that Jesus gives us, that we might even think that we could be subject to these things, like, that's a risk. Because, like, if you look at them, the core of all of them is an explanation that everything that you are doing, you have on its face completely wrong.
Right.
And you need to change it. And so it implies, like, however you got here the wrong way. What kind of infrastructure do we have?
Right.
It's Christianity that we got people who are like, you know what? I could be just dead jack wrong on everything I do.
Hopefully this article has it right.
Yeah, you don't even know how to die correctly, friend. 9 ways to die and get it right.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Actually, first off, I think we live in this part of culture, and I don't know if it's a product of the internet or a product of just where media's at or articles are at or writing's at, but we live in this list culture. And
yeah.
I'm astonished by how many things have to be put into a list. And we were actually just talking about this. I don't know if this was on air or off air last week about, you know, if we need to write a new article, editors must be just saying, well, do you have a list of some kind? Throw it in there. That's fine. We don't have a list in this issue. And then put whatever topic you want on it. Let the list of 9 ways to die, the list of 11 ways to better talk about your faith, the list of 3 ways to understand how Jesus died, and the 15 reasons you don't understand the Sanhedrin correctly, right? Like, whatever, all kinds of stuff, which I'd be interested to see the article on 15 reasons I don't understand the Sanhedrin correctly. And I'd also be interested to see who the writer is and where his context coming from. But
is that not how we – so here's the question. Do we digest things those way because we've been groomed to digest in that way? Or is that a right reaction to actually how people take things in? Because sermons do that too. Right?
Right.
Like,
oh, totally.
Standard, you gotta have, takeaway point.
Have 3 subway,
yep,
subpoints.
This is what you gotta have. People are gonna walk away from. These are the only things that they are capable of remembering. Eh.
It's this, as an educator, like I actually, within previous jobs, have been an educator that teaches certain things and has to learn how to write lessons and stuff like that. And I actually found myself doing this as when I started writing, like I originally did it as lists. And then I looked at it and I'm like, this is absolute crap. Like, I'm not actually teaching anybody anything. I'm just giving them 10 things to memorize and then no actual context to anything, and nothing is going to transform or fix anything. And I don't know if it is a right response to how people learn, because it doesn't seem like it. Like, the Bible doesn't give very many lists of things. Like, there's a couple of them in there.
You got a 10 commandments.
Yeah, you got a 10 commandments, but then, like, you know, and from a literary perspective, maybe Paul gives a couple lists of, like, sins that he talks about the churches are dealing with, or certain things that are going on. And there's things in the Bible that are listed out. But I don't think it's like, you know, we have to digest Kings or First Kings in a list perspective. We don't have to look at each one of the epistles as a list of things to work on. It's just Paul writing a letter going, hey, this is what's going on. Here is where I'm at. Greetings to you. Let's talk about where you can be at. Let's stand fast in our faith and understand that Jesus is Lord. And if you're not there yet, here's why he is Lord. And I don't think we see that. And I think the Bible does an incredible job of teaching.
Yeah.
And I think that there are plenty of books in the world that have that kind of stuff. And there are people that are speaking today that don't have to speak in lists. But I don't know if it's because we think that we need them and we think that society expects them. And so we dumb down all of our thought processes into, here's the 5 things you need to know. I don't know if you're in a hurry, and I don't know if you just don't have the mental capacity right now to absorb more than 5 things, but it certainly seems like it.
Maybe we should not orient our gospel presentation to the guy that goes, I'm in a real rush here. Can you give me the bullets?
Exactly. That's the problem. That is the problem. We're not willing to study the Bible as it's written. We're asking pastors to study the Bible in its full entirety and break into the serious, deep context and language diving into this stuff. Like, I've done this stuff myself too, and it's fascinating. But then we completely miss that as leaders in our church, because we think that we need to make the Bible convenient for the Sunday morning goer. And I'm not saying that is the problem. What I'm saying is, it's sad that we have to do that for people's expectations to be met.
Yeah,
so it makes me sad that we have believers that need to be spoon-fed every single thing in a list, because they're not willing to take the time and fully engage in the fact that God's word is transformative, mm-hmm. and exists in a place where you can study it for hours. It does not need to be in a 20-minute message. It does not need to be in 3 bullets, then walk out of here with an action thing. It is ultimately something you can really dive into, and we missed that.
Yeah. So it's a double-edged sword for me. Like, it's let's do two-sided coin.
Okay.
Because
I thought you were being cliche with the double-edged sword.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna pull it back. I think it's a two-sided coin because I think we are like that. People do think and they do remember things. It's the way brain stores things.
Yeah, it's selecting.
It's webs, right? Mm-hmm. Like connections and webs and things, right? It's not actually lists. It takes more effort to memorize bullets and memorize facts than it is to create a chain of things of which these weave together. As a matter of fact, most of the people that you know that they have on TV that do memorizations and things, like, they're not memorizing direct things. They're weaving things together in a story so that their brain has a way to tie it all together, right?
Yes.
So frankly, oftentimes bullet usage or three main points are substitutes for bad storytelling. Now here's the deal. The Bible is good storytelling.
Amazing.
It's very good storytelling and unique storytelling. Mark tells stories differently than Matthew tells stories, differently than even the purpose and reason in which Luke tells stories. And John's a wild storyteller.
I was going to say, and then John.
He's a wild man storyteller. and so I get it.
The word became flesh.
The Bible does employ packaging of things.
Oh, totally.
Like, Paul will continually come back to an argument, right? Like, argument, and then he goes, hey, here's a list of rebuttals, and then he comes back and then rebuts those, and then comes back to the main point. But even those aren't bullets, those are still wiring.
Right.
Right? In fact, one of the strongest things that people take away from is attempting to prove something wrong. Like, if I say, here's the true thing, how can that be true? If X, Y, Z aren't true.
Right.
Right? And then people are like, yeah, how can that be true? And they put even 10 seconds worth of thought into it, and they're not even thinking of anything. It's just their mind is churning for 10 seconds on that piece, and it starts to tie things together.
Yep.
Practical sayings, proverbs, certainly.
Absolutely.
Right? Sermon on the Mount's full of them. Mm-hmm. Right? Can you walk away with things like that? Yes. I think we gotta be careful about dumbing down a message if people can't do it. Like, that's a teaching problem to me.
Right.
And it's one of the things that I've learned. So, like, and I've said this a few times, but just to kind of reiterate. So, like, I started recently in a smaller church setting teaching kids and adults at the same time under the very idealistic premise that the children can handle it. We read Bible, I ask questions. We talk about the passage. It's straight scriptural exegesis. I tell almost no stories. Like, we just talk about Bible stuff.
The story's already there.
Right. They're there to speak of, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's interesting is that the kids have totally lived up to that. Mm-hmm. And I am surprised, but not surprised. Because my thought process was, like, are we limiting children by treating them as if they are only capable of understanding certain stories in a certain way? Like, when you go straight through, we had to breach topics like circumcision and menstrual bleeding and all kinds of stuff. And there's, like, I mean, you have 2-year-olds in a room.
It's some heavy stuff.
Up to 16, 17, right? Plus adults. And so, anyway, like, that doesn't say anything about the capability of that environment. What I'm telling you is that people, you can teach down to people and they'll meet you right there.
Yeah.
And you can teach up to people and they'll meet you right there.
Yep.
And that goes, same thing with the things that you read, same thing with the things that you study, right? Like, if you're not, you should be reading, studying, thinking, talking, trying to learn a step above where you're at, otherwise you're not growing. You're just feeding into the thing you do. I read I study primarily from, Erdman's New International Greek Testament commentary when it comes to some of the stuff I'm doing. One, because I don't know the Greek language well.
Mm-hmm.
I never learned it. I don't speak it. But I can get to the heart of the words to try to make sure you're reading it right. Right. But, like, that's above my pay grade, man. Like,
right.
I can't read that and be like, oh yeah, I dig on this. I know all of this, right? I have to work it. I have to look the words up. I have to check the lexicon. I have to compare it and make sure it's being rendered right and make sure I don't take any, like, stories from it and then extrapolate it simply because I like the way it translates in this way versus another. But so that takes me effort and work. But it's the right work because it's a stretch. It's helping me grow, right? And so if we are meeting people simply where they're at and not trying to help them grow, that is a limit. We are limiting them. And the posturing of which we do that is we say, well, they're not mine yet, right? If the thing that we're interacting with them in is, oh, they just dropped in, well, then actually you don't have any right to do that because you don't know where they're at.
Right.
Right? But, like, if they are your responsibility, if they are your folk, right? That is your responsibility is to grow them. So you get this kind of mixed message of, are these, who are these people? What are they coming in here to learn? Mm-hmm. What are they doing here? Where are they at? And then can I, if I yank too far, will they bail? Well, I mean, maybe, but like, it's your job.
Yeah.
It's kind of our job, right?
Yeah. You're called a shepherd. You're meant to be leading people.
Yeah.
Leading people gives the connotation that there's somewhere to go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're going somewhere. Because if you're right. just going to stand around, you're not leading. You're doing a hacky sack.
Yeah, nobody wants to do the shepherd that's sitting there and has a bunch of sheep around him all the time, but then you come back 10 years later and the sheep are still in the same spot and the shepherd's just in the center.
Right.
That is not a leader and that is not a shepherd. That's a guy that hangs out with sheep.
Right. And discipleship is the same way, right?
Totally.
So if you look around the people that are around you, one of the things I'll tell you is like, there's things that I share with guys. There's articles I might post. There's things I'm reading. I expect out of 10 guys, I expect 5 to read it. Mm-hmm. I expect 2 to understand it.
Yeah.
And 1 probably to disagree. And so,
I think that's fair.
And so, but 2 years down the road, my numbers are better.
Yeah.
Right? My numbers are better. And the one guy that disagreed with me is now disagreed me very well, very articulate. He's got things that he's thinking through. He's helping shape that I am approaching scripture correctly because of how he's reacting to me.
That's an awesome thing.
That's right. Right. And so the point is that like, and if, is that they're growing, right? And then wherever I'm at, what am I following so that I'm also growing? That's a discipleship issue. And so mm-hmm. There's not a seat. There's not ever a chair in discipleship and pastorship and eldership. Right. There's not a chair.
It's still the walk.
You're walking. You're walking.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. You're up, Booba.
All right, man. So as I read my second one, it may just be a afterthought to my first one, and I'm willing to read another one if I have to.
Okay.
A theme that I've seen that this may just be how people are acting or how people react to certain things, but it seems like we have, as a Christian culture, we have this misguided thought that within this country, that America is God's specific kingdom.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And we have this weird sense of entitlement with that statement that, if Christians as a whole, or at least in majority, American Christians believe that America is God's country, we have a problem there, because then that says that we are in the right and we need to stay in the right, and it's not about taking care of things here, it's about getting everyone on the same page as us, mm-hmm. which is a problem, which is completely untrue. America is not God's kingdom. The people that kind of blindly claim that America was founded on Christian beliefs and all this different stuff, like, I get the thought process behind that, but there's certainly some things that go against that, like, straight-up statement in and of itself alone. But it also, I think it's lazy. I think it's totally lazy to say that, you know, America was built on people that had good Christian values. Well, that doesn't mean that this is God's kingdom. That doesn't mean that America, the United States as a country, and as a place is God's, ultimate goal, and that there's not other stuff happening around the world and there's no other places to be. And I think that we have Christians that are following, and we have Christians that are writing articles from this perspective, that America is God's kingdom, so we need to A, look at ourselves better, and B, look at everyone else differently. And then it's not about winning people into the kingdom of God, it's about winning people over to American ideals. And then that kind of plays itself off into an outpouring of that as people trying to get morality into law, and that was why it was
right, it's a connection.
Maybe an offshoot from my original statement. So I'm willing to read another if you
okay,
want.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
So, one thing that I've seen that, I don't know if this is a common theme or something that's happening within our culture, but it's this weird wallowing self-pity that we have for ourselves at our sin, versus existing in the freedom that comes, from Jesus' sacrifice on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And that culminates into, these self-deprecating thought processes where, people who are writing articles or people who are talking about certain things are talking about what it's like to live within that guilt and within that place where there isn't victory in Christ, there's only guilt in Christ. And we have, that outpouring into a culture that believes themselves to be more focused on what they're doing wrong than focused on what God has done right. And how we get to that point.
Right.
So, whereas we should be focused on the prize that God has for us and living day in and day out to that, we are existing in this place where we know God's prize for us, but we're more focused on how we screw up. And we're more focused on how we keep messing up. And how do we stop messing up versus, well, how do we just follow Jesus? And those are two similar thought processes, and it seems to have the same outcome in thought process, but in action, which is super important within the Christian walk, it's a totally different thing. Paul talks about it when he speaks about living in the muck and the mire and jumping right back in. When you know that you've been saved and you know that you've become a follower of Christ, and you keep jumping right back in the muck and then existing in that, and then it just comes with this pity that happens for yourself. And rather than being transformed and running towards God, you're stuck in yourself.
Yeah, you're right. Like one of the directions that you see in a lot of those articles is a consolation of being in that position.
Mm-hmm.
We have lost a little bit of the scriptural edge, which is stop doing that, and then you wouldn't feel that way,
right?
What are we? So we're going through Hebrews, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, there is a tension there where Paul's like, "Knock it off! You became like the Israelites. Sure, they followed Moses out, but then they were blind and they got denied the promised land and they got denied the rest, and they're not going to be able to get it. But Jesus, the high priest.
Yeah. There's punishment, but that doesn't mean that there's not peace and salvation.
Well, so then his warning subsequent to that is, you Hebrews run the same risk, right? Like, you act like a bunch of jackanapes just because you got associated with this thing, and you didn't persevere to hit God's rest, and you'll wander the thing and be locked out.
Yeah.
And so I think the point is that, like, one of the things you can overdwell on is acting like you have no control over your situation. Here's the deal. I'm not saying you're going to live a sinless life, but that doesn't mean you got to bat 100 for 100, friend.
Right.
Okay. That doesn't mean you, like, someone who goes, yeah, I just can't help continuing to cheat on my wife and look at porn and steal things. And, like, I hear you, but you can help it. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Is capable of doing. Like, you just because you're not sinless doesn't mean you're the captain of the ship.
Right.
Of the sin ferry. All right. So I think that's one of the focuses, though, is, like, we spend a lot of time consoling people who are like, hey, just know that God knows you're going to sin. Yeah, I mean, he does, but he does, like, the Bible does tell you to knock it off so that you don't feel this way, so that you are not living ultimately counter to the identity God gave you. He says, this is you, this is where full joy and, like, living fully in the identity that I've given you in Jesus Christ. You get that if you do these things. When you act like this, yeah, you're going to feel like crap because you're not living consistent with your identity. And you're going to feel that every time, and you should stop it. And, like, as opposed to calling people to more consistent with the identity God gave them, we like to console them kind of in their space and be like, oh, you know, just know that everybody kind of does this. And we're like, oh, good, everybody's freaking miserable.
Right.
Excellent.
And in our consolation of people for this, we are putting this cheap, like, lacquer on this crappy identity.
It's a false win.
It comes back to false win. It really is. When we exist in a place where we fully acknowledge the power of Christ and the power of his death on the cross and what that did for us, right? And that ability for salvation, that ability for oneness with God, right? But then we focus mainly on the fact that we are sinful creatures and, you know, fallen man, all the different stuff, whatever. Ultimately, all we're doing is we're giving ourselves an excuse to never change. And then we're cheapening the identity that God has given us and the ability to be like him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I agree. We are sinful.
Yes.
We will always sin. There's no scripture anywhere that points to a perfect being besides Jesus.
Agreed.
Right? Like, this does not exist, especially in human form. But that doesn't mean that we have to be sinful and always within that pitied place. Like, we don't always have to be within sin. There is a chance that you can go 20 years without sinning and then screw up one day. There is a chance that you could beat porn. And there's a possibility for people, and I've talked to people, and the honest to God truth have told me, yeah, that's no longer an issue. But we get dudes and we get gals that are just stuck in something, and their response is, oh, I'm a sinful creature, it's no problem. Where the response should be, oh, I follow a God that is transformative and is powerful and is bigger than what I'm dealing with right now, and I'm cheapening his power in my life, and I'm cheapening the Spirit's ability to work within my heart by saying, oh, I'm going to sit here in this mud because that's who I am, versus I'm getting out of this because that's who Christ calls me to be.
Right. That work is, Jesus' work is a reconciliation work, not a blindness.
Right.
Right? It doesn't say, it reconciles you so that you move from your state of being guilty to your state of now being declared innocent based upon what Jesus has done on the cross, right? As opposed to the fact that you just stay over there and you're not actually reconciled to the Father.
Right.
You just put on a different shirt and everyone's like, see, different dude.
Right.
But you know very well that you're still standing in the same spot.
Yep.
You're still not reconciled to God. Like, you get that, right? And you feel that. And, like, you can complain about that stuff and kind of bemoan the circumstances, or accept the reconciliation and get your ass over there. Stop acting like that.
Right.
And, like, and here's the thing is when you end up back again, and then you know that the work of Jesus reconciles you, get back in there.
Exactly.
So, like, I guess that's the deal, right? It's like when you're feeling out, you're acting outside of the identity that you've been given through the work of Christ on the cross and through the blessings of God the Father, and you decide not to live that way, you're going to feel that every time.
Absolutely.
And, like, yes, I think we can remind you that you've been reconciled so that you start living like it, as opposed to sitting off in the corner and kind of bemoaning your circumstances. We have a faithful high priest who has been tempted and who knows very well what you're going through. Like, Paul's argument in Hebrews is a very, very drastic comparisons of stop being a jackin' apes. By the way, Jesus, great high priest. I mean, he keeps coming back to that theme over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, okay, I agree, Bova.
All right, what's here next we go. One?
My number two was, surveys are worthless. Because nobody agrees on terms.
Oh, totally.
We don't agree on definitions here. We cannot ask basic questions of broad groups of people because we do not agree on terms.
Oh, and ultimately, I think that one of the other things that completely, just throws aside all statistical data from surveys is, if you are asking Christians, right, to answer a question, you're asking everyone from the guy that shows up on Easter with his mother-in-law.
Right,
right.
Right.
To the people who are leading focused, Christ-driven churches that are truly doing work and are transformed within the power of Christ.
Right.
You're asking those huge difference in people the same questions and expecting their answers to be the same.
Yeah.
And so we get this, well, 37% of all Christians say that Christmas isn't real. It's like, wait, what? And then 67% of Christians think Jesus was a great guy, but the other 33% are not convinced. It's like, hold up, where? What?
What? Yeah. The premise is off, right? 28% of guys shave their legs, and you're like, I can't take any of this data anymore. I can't even trust dudes.
I don't know why, from a sociological perspective, we feel like we need to get statistics on Christianity. Like, I don't care about the statistics on the entirety of Christianity. I care about the guy that's sitting next to me. And I care about the guy across from from me. Jesus does not ever ask you to think about Christianity on its whole. Second off, he never says the word Christianity. But he's not asking you to think about your religion as a whole and wondering, hey, I wonder how all 10 million of us are doing.
How's the team doing?
Exactly.
How's the kingdom on the
work? Jesus never asks you to be the coach of the team. Like, he's never once said that. He expects you to be on the court doing the work. That's all the guy says to do, is live within the means of being a Christ follower. That is what he expects of you. It is never about how are we doing as a team.
Right.
Yet, statistically speaking, we try and figure that out. We want to know, sociologically, what are Christians thinking nowadays? I don't care. I want to know what Jim across my hallway is thinking, because maybe he does or doesn't know Jesus. But either way, I should probably figure it out.
Yeah.
And then I can move on to the next person that God puts in front of me.
It's a diversion, really. Like, to the extent that we think, we look at broad principles and we say, oh, we were at 50% 10 years ago, and now we're at 40. Now we better get on it, as if you weren't supposed to be making disciples 20 years ago.
Right, our work is reactional versus anything else.
We only need to put in enough discipleship work to move the needle back up above 50.
Exactly.
Hey, we're doing the right work. We're 55. Everybody 100, then get back on the street. We got more work to do.
It's ridiculous.
And so, here's the deal. I find those surveys interesting, like, broadly from a sociological perspective than I do from a, like, there's no motivation to them, right? I don't say, oh, hey, we're going to do X, Y, Z, right? But, like, if we can't agree on terms like, who's a Christian? Or, hey, are you a Christian? Do you believe in basic biblical doctrines? No. Can we agree that you can't have sex with a lamp or something and have it not be a problem? Well, I suppose if I'm a Catholic, 20% say sure. Lamp looks all right. You know, like, if we can't agree on terms here, the questions are worthless.
Right.
Like, and so if you want to read surveys for the reason I read them, which is because they're just interesting to me and people are fascinating and flabbergast me, go right ahead, right? But if you are looking for any type of bellwether or motivation or reaction to say, hey, we're winning or losing, that's completely unhealthy and we just need to stop that.
Yeah.
That just needs to stop.
I want demographical data on how I should run my church. Or how I should run my ministry, or how I should be talking to people about Jesus. I get your motivation behind it. I understand that. But it does not matter, because ultimately the gospel does not change. The good news does not change from person to person. What it is you live out a life for Christ, you are focused on that, and you take people with you. Yes. You exist in a place where you're following him, and the people will follow you because you look different. And I promise you that is the truth. If you're wondering how to do this kind of thing on how do I talk to people about Jesus and all this different stuff, stop it. Figure out your own deal. Figure out how to honestly and earnestly follow Christ. And I promise you someone's going to ask you about it.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, Bova. I have yet to have – now, I could be wrong. I'm a young guy. I'm not lived in multiple circumstances, right? So I'm going to – I am certainly open for this to – change in me. But I've yet to see blind idealism not work. I've yet to see, like, where I don't, you don't say things like, hey, who's our target? Everybody's your freaking target.
Yeah.
Whoever needs
Jesus.
Are they
breathing? Yeah. They need Jesus. They're our target.
Yeah, like, oh, hey, I'm after kind of the young, you know, millennials or whatever. It's like, well, what if an old man moves across the street from you? Sorry, buddy. I hope someone else moves here who cares about oldies.
Yeah, I checked my demographic data. You're not in it. Sorry. Yeah.
I mean, there's a church for oldies down the street. Good luck getting there, Pops.
Oh, man. I would just love to see someone try and have that conversation with Jesus. Hey, you didn't notice Randy across the street. He was the 75-year-old guy that moved in, and I had him move in specifically across from you because I really wanted to talk to him. Well, Jesus, I'm sorry. Like, I was really focused on the youth at that point in time, and I had a lot of stuff going on in the inner city, and we were out in the suburbs. And he goes, I didn't notice that you had an inner city ministry, and Randy was not important from across the street because he needed Jesus. He was an alcoholic and all this different stuff, and he had a tough life,
right?
And really could have used me, and I was really hoping you could do that. You should have had him move to the inner city, God. Like, that's where I was
at.
Like, Jesus, I was really working hard there. Randy just wasn't within that.
I was spending all my time on the internet trying to understand the distinctions of Panama Red so I could talk with the millennials. You want the joke of the world? Frickin' Randy's on Panama Red because he got some hip problems. He could help you out with that stuff. And here's the thing.
I love it.
Some of that's not fair because there's no pastors, no church, there's no Christian in the free world who would describe themselves that way. Say, I only do millennials and I would know Randy. Right. However, here's my caution would be is that when we frame interactions with people and say, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. And these are the people that I target, especially when it comes to churches. Like, if it's not everybody, I don't know why. I don't like, and if I say, well, I can't, and even the thought process of kind of taking our eyes and saying we cater to this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Randy, I learn a lot from guys like Randy.
Oh, totally.
Right? And so, and maybe I need a Randy in my life who can look at me and say, hey, your idealism actually, it hits a sinful world and ain't gonna work, right? granted, the 10 people you run into, it seems to be hanging out, alright? So I'm willing to be wrong here. But
you
like,
11 guys, then it messes up.
That's right. Then it all tails off. But like, I haven't seen people who are faithful in the means, and I mean all the means, and we're just open and say, mm-hmm. Maybe it's Randy, maybe it's a single mother, maybe it's a whatever I run into in any circumstance that around. I'm saying that I'm open, and God will deliver folks into a willing heart that wants to share Jesus with them and watch the world change around them. I have not seen that fail yet.
Right.
Maybe it's either it's a lesson to learn or, you know, maybe we can really be idealists here. Maybe the one time of which, like, the free corporate world can't look out and function on idealism, or a government can't function on idealism, parenting can't even be idealistic. But maybe the good news of Jesus Christ can be taken at its core simplicity and taken out into a world and function under idealism that says go out and make disciples. And you do everything that is within your means and trust that God will continue to provide the energy behind it, the words behind it, the opportunity behind it. And you just have to be willing to follow that opportunity even beyond what you think is possible. And that's how you end up influencing more people than you could possibly believe that you could.
Right.
All right. Are you out?
I have one more, but okay. If you have one more, it's probably better than mine.
You go ahead and do yours. I can't even read mine.
Okay, fair enough. So one of the other common, the last real common theme that I've seen, and this is within articles and this is within kind of just the Christian culture in general, is it's this whole thought process of, well, God, who do we have to love, right?
Yeah.
And so it seems to be, and it's kind of funny that I actually read the whole parable of the Good Samaritan recently, right?
Yep.
And it's the lawyer asking, you know, like, who is my neighbor, when he says, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, right?
Yep.
He goes, who's your neighbor? And then he tells the story about the Samaritan. And so, long story short, two dudes that you would expect to love on somebody end up walking on the other side of the road. The last person that you wouldn't expect it to do, which is a Samaritan, that point in time to those people would have been like telling you that it's the worst person you could have thought of.
ISIS.
It's just, yeah, exactly. It's straight up ISIS.
Yeah.
That shows up and goes, hey man, I'm gonna pay for your wounds. Can you take care of this guy for me? And we're the Christian over here going, hold up, what? ISIS didn't do that. That's impossible.
That's right.
But it's this concept that, like, as a culture, we are trying to figure out the answer to that question, the whole love your neighbor as yourself. Who is my neighbor? Who do I have to love? And I feel like it's kind of sad that we're still asking that question.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we are still trying to categorize what God's love looks like and how that outflows from us. Now, I get the specifics of that question, but from a broad brush, like, we figured it out. we have our answer that it's everybody.
Yeah.
And it's every single person. There's nobody excluded from that. Who do we need to minister to and who do we need to love and who do we need to take care of? It's everyone. If their heart is beating and they're a creation of God, we should care about them in some way, shape, or form and probably work for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So somewhere some Christian editor has got to get a stamp that just says everyone. And some guy's like, right, hey, I wrote 10,000 words to describe who we should love. Shut up. Everyone, punk. Next article.
Right, exactly.
7 steps on who to love. Everyone, stamp.
How to love this person specific? It's like, just now, shut up.
So here's the thing, though. So here's where the nuances come in for those. It's like we look at a world and we have no idea how to do that.
Right.
We're like, okay, no, I get it. I'm supposed to love everybody, but that guy hates me and that guy wants to date me. That dude does. And I don't, and that guy did something really offensive and that person thinks I'm an idiot and that one hates my sister and like whatever it is, yeah. Right? And we say like,
we rationalize the lack of love for everybody.
How am I supposed to do it? You know, like we can't figure out what that looks like. And so the Bible speaks to it.
Yeah.
It speaks to it. And here's the reason this is what's difficult. The reason we don't know how to do that is because we do not want to do it the way that we know it is to be done. Right? Like, I want to be able to do that with the opportunity that I can otherwise, that he will learn his lesson.
Uh-huh.
Right? That he will not hate me or that he'll reconcile with my sister.
Yep.
Or what, you know, whatever it is, right? Like, I want to be able to love somebody while retaining the option that they learn that all their ways were wrong and will acknowledge that at some point down the road.
And they get what they deserve in my eyes.
Exactly. So my desire for love, I'm willing to do it, except for there's a justice contingency that says, God, as long as I'm faithful here and love this person like you said, promise me that they will come to justice. And it's a real selfish, like shallow justice. That
right.
You
are not the hand of God's justice.
No.
What you think is right is not what God is going to say in the situation.
Well, yeah, and there are always things like, you know, I want him, this person to personally acknowledge to me that they have done me wrong or thought wrong in life. That's what our version of justice. Our version of justice is I am validated as correct.
Right.
That is not justice, friends.
No, it's not.
That's not what it works.
It's not in any definition what justice is. It's a selfish justice that we've come up with that feeds our ego and makes us right versus the other person being wrong. It's the same concept as you see within little kids that want their brother or sister to get in trouble because they did something wrong. And justice is when they get in trouble and we get to go, ha ha. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You would try and teach that out of your kids, but yet you do it when you're 45 and you deal with your neighbor who always has his dog crap in your yard. And you want to figure out how to love on him, but let him know that that's messed up.
That's right.
That dog crap's in your yard. It's ridiculous.
God, I'll love him as long as at some point he will acknowledge that he did me wrong.
Right, exactly. We need people to come back and say, hey, you know, this is everything that I did wrong to you and thanks for really loving on me. And it's like, no, loving on them is not for you to decide the justice of them. You're not judge, jury, or executioner.
No.
God exists in that, and maybe you should look at your relationship with God from the perspective of you're not trusting him to be just.
Yeah.
You're not allowing him in his way for you to love on them specifically and let him handle how that works at the end.
Yeah. I will say, so two things from that. One, it is cool, though, when someone does acknowledge that they've done you wrong.
Absolutely.
And so
it's an amazing feeling.
I mean, put the think on that, and if you feel like you've actually, you know, handled something wrong and you've not told somebody about it, I mean, it's nice.
It feels freeing for you and them.
Yeah, it's really cool. So, I mean, go ahead and do that. I think it's a positive thing. But, like, if that's your measure of justice, that's silly.
Right.
And I have noticed this. Like, there's been situations, even recently, where there are just people who, like, I know they do not talk about me nicely. they will to my face.
Right.
But they know better. I think they're not saying quite true things, but it could be possible. And they're not right representations. It just depends on the moment and the crowd.
Right.
And I just happen to be privy to some of that. And I think to myself, oh man, I don't want to forgive this or I don't want to move on from this. I'm upset about it. what I know in my heart and in my mind is that, you know, it's not a thing. It's just not a big deal to me. My sense of justice is not the crux here,
mm-hmm.
As to whether there is a reconciliation of which I'm the only guy who's aware of. it's just not necessary.
Right.
And I can move on from that and should, right? But there's just a nagging part of me, like when I can let stuff go, give it another month or 2 months, and then I run into this person or I see something go on and I think to myself, yeah, I'm still waiting for that apology, friend. when will we be reconciled to my justice?
Oh, man.
And so, the one thing that I know that I'm thinking about, all right, even though I'm rebelling against it, is that I feel ridiculous.
Right.
In that moment, I think to myself, it's true, but no, this is, we're not doing this. We got to let this thing go. And so I get it. It's human, but that is why those articles perpetuate, right? Because we look at a world and we say, I know I'm supposed to love them. I have no idea how. And if we are leaving a baptismal pool, friends, saying that we are going to follow Jesus Christ and we're committed to his kingdom and we have no idea what it looks like to love people in a variant circumstances, most of which we share, thank you. Uh-huh. Like, your understanding that you are wholly distinct from these people is incorrect, sir. All right? And so, it'd be, like, honestly, like, practically, tangibly, we look at the world and said, I don't know how to love you. Like, that is a Christian community problem.
Uh-huh.
That is not a one guy's problem. That is, as a group, if we don't got this crap together, we really need to think on this, put the prayer on it, figure out what to do with ourselves when we don't know how to love people. But it's an honest reflection of where our culture is at, where some of these I think are overblown hyperbole of where Christian culture is. I think that is the number of those articles is an accurate representation of where we are as a Christian culture, myself included at times, and it is a failure of ours to live consistently following Jesus and an empowering community that encourages people, that broadens our perspective, that doesn't surround us by only millennials, right? That here's the deal. It's a risk. It's a risk that groups you into pods and says, this is the group of this, this is the group of this, these are the group of people that are kind of like this. You don't get around other people, even in your own church community and your culture, and so you don't spread it out. There's a way broader group of people that I run to at work. I'm sure you ran into this, right? Different age groups, different backgrounds, different cultural things, right? Than you would at a church, because churches tend to be geographical. It's not really the fault. It's just where they're at, right?
Yeah.
Same types of folks, or they become hyper focused on things, or you get into a specific thing. Hey, I'm gonna go to the adult study. Okay, completely reasonable, right? It's where adults study.
Yeah.
You know where I've learned the most? Freaking sitting in with them kids.
Oh, totally.
Because their questions are awesome. And they're
honest.
Yeah, right.
And it's not about posing for making your questions seem like you're the deep thinker.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about like, hey, I don't understand who Jesus was. Great, let's talk about a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. How is Jesus God's son? Awesome. Let's have that conversation real quick.
Right.
I'm not certain where dinosaurs are. I appreciate that you asked that question, kids. Let's talk about it for a second. That's more honest than the guy that knows the answer to his own question going, well, specifically in talking about Jeremiah and his reaction to this certain situation. It's like, dude, you're asking that question, so I feel like you know more.
Yeah, right. Right.
Sorry.
Right. No. That's true. And so, like, again, it's a double-sided coin because, yeah, you get around groups of people who are thinking similar ways and you grow in those things. That's awesome. That's really good. But, like, just gotta be careful on the balance with that thing.
Yeah.
Just don't shift yourself off so that you literally look around and say, I don't love anybody.
Right.
Unless they're in my small group.
Right. If you don't look like me, talk like me, act like me, I don't know how to love you.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Like, wow. Way to not understand the message of Jesus at all.
Right. Hi, I'm a Christian and I think lamp sex is fine. Where do you start? Well, foundationally,
there's some stuff we need to
Here's the deal.
About.
Put that on the table. Figure out how to love that guy.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, don't take him in your house or anything.
Especially if you have nice lamps.
Find a neutral location, preferably not a park. Something.
just an industrial building with no lamps, just ceiling lighting only. Oh, man.
Halogen. Something. All right. Something with a guard.
All right. What's your fourth thing? Or your third thing? What do you got?
That went off on a rough tangent. Okay, so, and this gets to the peripheral of some of these stories, but like, there is nothing that any type of criminal mastermind or atheist or whatever you, or other religion, like, there's no sin out there being committed that a group of Christians ain't doing as well and trying to either defend themselves on or, basically have no reaction to at all. Right? Like, they're most difficult stories because they're kind of funny because people are acting like stupid. Like,
right.
Like that guy that fled naked, the pastor who was running
pastor
naked.
Pastor in Florida that ran away naked from the lady.
Nude people running away is funny, right? Like on its flat out.
That's even in the Bible and funny.
That's what I'm saying. John Mark starts a trend and now everybody doing it.
Drop the loincloth, run away.
Everybody's heading out in the nude. And so you think to yourself, like, on its face, you're like, nude people run away. That's funny. And then this guy, this crackpot comes up and he's like, and he's not leaving, right? He's going to remain pastor of church. And you're like, oh.
Wait, what?
What? and then you think to yourself, like, there just aren't, this is true biblically, just like it's true in stories today, right? Forever you want to look, oh, this culture's going to hell in a handbasket. Come on. Come on, man. Every Christian that answered that freaking survey done running nude out somebody's house somewhere.
Right, exactly.
You know, and so, like, the stories that are in some of these things, it's flabbergasting, but, like, it reminds you honestly of the depths of sin, the deceit of an opponent who otherwise will attempt to convince you that these things, A, aren't happening, or they're not that bad. Now, don't get me wrong here. As much as you've been reconciled, don't wallow in your sin. It doesn't mean you don't recognize it rightly.
Right.
It is what it is. You need reconciliation because you looked at God, said, I'm going to do as I please, turn the other way, and ran nude the other direction and required Jesus to reconcile that. God bless him that he did it, right? But like, your sin is still, it's bad for you. It creates distance between you and God. It's offensive to the Father. Like, it's a bad deal.
Right.
It's a bad deal. So I'm not diminishing that at all, but I guess what I'm saying is that, like, you need to be careful how you look at a world, and it goes back to that we don't know how to love people, is because we've created a distance between us and them, as if that is something we've done on our own accord. Right? The only distance between us and them are the distance of which the Lord Jesus Christ has died and drug us back into reconciliation with the Father as a good and faithful high priest.
Right.
Right? Otherwise, you'd be standing right next to these guys, likely in the nude, likely running from a house somewhere. Okay?
And then saying, I'm the better.
Yeah. And I've got this under control. And you, because of who you voted for or because of the circumstances of what you do, you know what? You know what I've noticed? I know a lot of Christians. I mean, a ton of them, right?
Yeah.
I'm confident that I know more people who are not Christians who are faithful charitable givers, and people that are doing charity work, actually like changing the lives of people positively. And it should not be. I mean, I'm glad that they're doing it, but like that it should not be.
It's funny now that I take a step back and think about that. That's true within my life too. Like I know more people who do not claim to be Christians or Christ followers that are doing better jobs of a lot of things that Christ followers should be doing than the Christ followers are.
Like a Samaritan.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like it, exactly. It's right? The Samaritan that's doing the better job of charity than the priest is, right? Uh-huh. And like, and then we have the audacity to look down on other people for what they're doing when we're sitting in the muck with them and going, hey, you're wrong because of blah, 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 blah. But by the way, you're doing a better job than I am at this stuff, right?
Right.
Like, we as the church have certain duties that we have to do, whether as the bride of Christ itself or as in people who love Jesus. We're supposed to be taking care of people, yet we have shirked our responsibilities. And socially speaking, there are people who do not claim the name of Christ that do a better job of taking care of people than we do as a body, which is ridiculous.
Yes.
It's absolutely ridiculous. If we are truly following the word of Christ and following his tenets and following what we're supposed to be doing, we are supposed to be the force within culture that is there for change and positive things that are happening in people's lives. But what we are is we are a force that is existing in a place where we are above everyone else in thought, but not in actuality. It's
right.
Ridiculous.
Right. Well, somehow we've taken good news and we've made it good gossip.
Right.
Right. Like,
oh,
it's,
my gosh.
Right. It's a tabloid. Like, it, because news is true.
Yeah.
News is true. It impacts your life. It changes the world around you. You start to look at things differently because of how you know this thing to be accurate. Right. And somehow we've been able to convert this thing to good gossip. It sounds really juicy, but like, it's only something you pass around between the fellas.
Here's what it could be.
Over coffee and good opportunities or whatever, but it doesn't actually change your life because it's not real.
And
it's not a true thing.
Then we're surprised by people who don't believe in what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
like we have the audacity to be surprised by someone who does not believe in the transformative power of Jesus when we are sitting here having supposedly gotten out of the muck and put on our white clothes. Oh, and by the way, I got some stains on me.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's right. How do you not believe that a baby was born from a virgin? Like, because you've seen this good gossip that we've otherwise been distributing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like,
nothing has happened within my life, but I certainly know the right words and phrases. How can you not understand that a man was actually physically within a whale?
Right. 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 So like, I hear good news. I see it in people's lives. I read about it, right? Like, I'm taking it in and seeing Christianity change the world. You tell me dude lived in a fish. I'm like, you know what? Believable. I believe it.
Exactly.
If we're
truly living out the way that Jesus expects us to do, and in a way that literally our lives are no longer the same because we are followers of Christ. There's similarities because we're human, but there's no real similarities between who we are now and what we used to be. You no longer have to explain science first what happens in the Bible. People just go, I don't give a crap if stomach acid of oil would eat a dude alive. That God changed that guy's life and millions of others. He can make a friggin' whale not digest a guy.
Right. It can be done.
It's no longer an issue. The cosmos are no longer a thing that tells us that we're just that small in an expanse. It is now a thing where, yeah, we're that small just to show us how big God is. Like, that is no longer a fight that we have to have.
Right. Right. So, like, I believe, so we're on the other side of those examples, right? Even the other side of Jesus' miracles, where, like, the impact of the good news of the gospel I have seen and believe to be true, that otherwise makes me not doubt miracles.
Right.
In Jesus' time, it's the miracles that help affirm the message.
Right.
The power of the message and how it has transformed the world helps me believe those miracles on this side of it. And so we look at people who reject all that stuff, and here's the thing. They're not running into good news.
Right.
They're running into good gossip that we have good answers to that doesn't actually change the world. And that's not a works-based salvation, friend. It's the natural implication of hearing good news and having it change the world.
Right. You have people who are constantly corrupting the thought process that God is a transformative God and that He reigns and rules supreme, right? Like, we have that. If we lived that out as a body of believers and a body of Christ, we would no longer have to have these kind of conversations where we're constantly having to prove that God exists.
Right.
We would be having to have conversations where too many people are showing up at our door because we don't have enough time to minister to the amount of people that want to find Jesus because they've seen what He does.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the thing. God has always been in the identity business, right? Like, you look at Israel, you could pick them out because of what they're eating, what they're wearing, where they're at on any given day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What are their clothes made of?
Right. You can pick them out. And so He shifts that identity, says, look, it's always and forevermore in Jesus. Okay. Not only what He's done, but how He was, what He acted like, the things that He said. You go do that and make disciples of that.
And people
should be able to pick you out. And because they can't pick us out because we're having sex with lamps and whatever business is going on and running nude from places.
Exactly.
And so you think to yourself, well, okay, gossip.
Yeah.
It's gossip.
Yeah. At that point in time, we belittled the gospel of Christ to be the same news as the news of Zeus.
Yeah.
Like, it's just as believable. Zeus has the same transformative power as Jesus, and people that see only corruption within the church and only see people that are just getting this stuff wrong and that aren't living out an honest faith. And that's not meant to say that you have to be perfect for Jesus' power to be shown. But it's effort, man. Like, it's honest and true believing and going further than that and changing your life. God's message and God's glory is transformative. It's not just meant to be a hear it and then, oh, okay, cool. No, it is meant to be hear it and what do I have to sell? Who do I have to give up? What parts of me do I have to give up to call myself a believer in the kingdom of Christ? And how many people can I take along with me because my life will never be the same. I will never be the same and I don't ever want to be the same.
Right. The New Testament is a verb fest.
Oh, totally.
I mean, it just is. Like, there's stuff going on, right? It's not butt-sitting.
Yeah, people are moving that entire part of the Bible.
Right. Perseverance is not just like a willpower issue, right? You doing something.
Right.
You persevering in light of who Jesus is.
Yeah, exactly.
It changes the world. All right. What do we think? Have we nailed it?
I don't know if it's 100% done, but I feel like it's close.
So here's a broad reaction then, Buva. What are your thoughts? Do we feel like, so we talked about this a little bit, but is there like a brass tacks of this thing?
If there's, I'm terrible at brass tack stuff, but here's what I'll say. I think if we...
Hold on a second. Why do people say that?
Brass tacks?
Yeah. What's it a reference to?
I don't know.
You get down to the brass tacks. Like, is it a tack, like a thumbtack?
I've always thought of it like taxes and like monetary.
Hmm.
But it makes more sense from a metallic perspective.
Right, like you've got all the papers, out of the folder, and so you're down to the brass tacks that held the folder together.
Hey, that makes sense.
Maybe that's right.
Maybe that's right.
I'll look it up later.
I thought those were called brads.
Let's get down to the brads.
Then some dude named Brad is going to be like, yeah.
Yeah, get down to the brads. All right, we're scraping the manila.
Okay.
The manila folder.
We're scraping the manila here. If we move from a culture that call themselves Christians in name only and actually move towards a body of believers and doers of the word of Christ and follow the word, study the word, pray and act and actually get up and move, I truly think that we will stop have to have these same conversations over and over and over again about what Christianity is, what it's like to be a Christ follower, what it's like to live in the kingdom. If you have people that are constantly asking those questions but refuse to get answers to it, that's when we have problems. And that's when we have articles that hash out the same stuff over and over and over again for 30, 40, 1,000 years. But if we have people who are honestly and earnestly willing to take up the fact that they are a Christ follower and are a different person because of the kingdom that they call themselves a part of, we are now truly moving towards a place that's going after Christ and after His heart versus going after stupid and meaningless things.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would agree. I think at the core, it's an identity issue.
Yeah.
Right? Who are you? If I'm a Christ follower, I follow Christ. Mm-hmm. You do the things He does.
That in itself is an action statement.
Yes. I do, right. I'm going to, it is not just that I agree with what he's done. It's not just I have.
I'm not a Christ acknowledger.
Right. And it's not gossip news. It's not, or it's not good gossip, right? It is good news, which means the things that I believe are true things. They've altered the world. I am called to follow and do the things that Jesus has done because that is my identity. That's what you do in the kingdom. You don't agree to live in the kingdom and then decide you're going to take a chair and live however you want to live.
Right.
People in the kingdom live a certain way. And so, that's the core of these, isn't it? Is, hey, how do I blah, blah, blah? How do I love this type of people?
Right.
What is my actual identity? How do I know if I am a Christian? Blah, uh-huh. blah, blah, blah. Like, these are all kingdom questions that A, the Bible answers, and B, are found in an identity of Jesus,
yeah.
and C, is the same identity that's passed on to you.
Yep.
Brother of Jesus, mm-hmm. share in the kingdom, priests and kings. Right. You understand what I'm saying? So, like,
yeah. yep.
so, I mean, or kingdom of priests, that's what I wanted.
Yep.
So, you know, it is an identity issue. And like, yes, you will bail from your identity. Yes, Jesus has reconciled that. Let's not spend any more time on it than is necessary.
Right.
Right. Acknowledging what he has done, absolutely spend all the time on it. But like, I guess the problem is that when we don't know who we are, we don't know what to do. We don't know how to look at other people in relative to who we are because we don't know who we are. And generally at the core of that is we don't know who Jesus is, and so we don't get to understand the identity of this passage. It's a simple identity issue. And if you think that is too either hyper-spiritual or too theoretical, I ask you, what was the whole system that God sets up with Moses? It is an identity issue. He gives law yep. to tell his people how they are to behave. Yep. It is an identity. This is who you are. This is how my people dress. This is how uh-huh. they act.
This is how you'll be different from everybody else around you.
Exactly. It wasn't intended to say everything else stinks. It says this is what my people will do. This is how people will know them.
Right.
We've been giving a higher calling. It is not such a restricted responsibility, but it is an awesome undertaking, which is to say your identity is found in Jesus Christ. So we act. He came here as an example. You do what he does. He is, in effect, the new law, right? That's
right.
what you do, okay? And so, like, if you can get that as your core framework, you stop asking these types of questions. It is where so we've tried this, right? It's not that we're not attempting this. What would Jesus do comes from this question. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what would he have done? Okay? But like, we have a better framework for that, right? Like, we know what he did. We've seen him do
right.
things. We've seen him react to people. And so, I think sometimes we try to, hyperlocate some of the things that were going on and over, complicate some mm-hmm. of the things that are going on around us. And so, what Jesus did with these, yes, we're not Jesus, so it's gonna be some trouble. That's what the Holy Spirit does, is it helps you mm-hmm. be more like Jesus.
Yep.
You're welcome. So ways to bridge this gap, get to know Jesus.
Yeah.
Read this stuff, man. Just read it. Like the little kids. They love that stuff. Sinews together, not five bullet points. Read it through. Let them tell a story.
Yep.
Okay. Get to know Jesus Christ. And then you don't have to say, oh, what did that one guy say at that one thing that I looked up on the internet that one time? I love how that guy said it in a sermon. I listen to sermons all the time. I love that stuff.
Same here.
I love listening to people talk. Okay. But like, if it does not translate to you actually being able to think and know Jesus on your own, you need to bail from that stuff and focus. Focus for a while. Go ahead and pick up, read it, get the audiobook. I don't care. You need to know Jesus because your identity comes from that. And then once you get that stuff down, you're going to know how to live. And the Holy Spirit will help you do those things. Jesus says, I'm sending a helper. It's to do that very same mm-hmm. thing. Because God goes, hey, I send you an identity. It's to be like Jesus. And you go, I can't do it, Lord. And he goes, I agree.
That's why I'm sending that.
I'm sending this helper. I think that's the manila. I think that's the brass tacks.
All right. Cool.
All right. What do we got? People need advice here?
Yeah. I think
we're on a freaking roll. Stay away from that lamp.
All right. Dear Live from the Path, my friend has decided she can no longer tolerate my husband.
Oh, man.
She feels he doesn't respect her. This is far from the truth, in my mind. We've supported her emotionally and financially from time to time for many years. My husband does have a habit of making clunky jokes, anything for a laugh or to fill the void. But a real friend should see beyond that to the loving, supportive person he is at his core, in his heart, and forgive. We are now banned from her social group. I find this very harsh, cruel even. I guess my friendship doesn't count as I'm being thrown out with the perceived trash as well. I'm depressed and angry, and I want some kind of revenge and to hurt her back. I was so happy with our little group. Now it's been taken away from me. Advice?
I've got follow-up questions.
I don't think I can answer them, but I can... I will build the persona of who I think she might be, and I'll try and answer your questions. What
okay.
are your follow-up questions?
So the question number one is what is the makeup of this social group of which one woman can chuck a couple, and everyone else, like, will abide by this?
They're in like a neighborhood group. They're all friends along the street, and this gal has been here longer than these people have. And so she has more power and she's able to throw
them out. She's the queen of the...
She's the head of the homeowners.
So she can say, hey, we don't talk to the Smiths. Yep. And we're like,
And everyone else is like, we don't talk to the Smiths anymore.
Yeah, that's an unhealthy group of people. And
you should be excited that you're out of that.
You're well rid of them. Thank you. Next social group. So, I mean, I would be concerned about... So just thinking of my group of friends, right? That ain't happening.
Right,
it ain't happen. Like, Boova goes, hey, we're not talking to Ben anymore. They'd be like, what do you mean we're talking to Ben?
I'm going to talk to Ben.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Ben. Why don't you work out your own? In fact, get in there and work out your problems.
Yeah, exactly. As Christ followers, we're going to go, okay, that's not how that works.
Yeah, we're not going to...
Go and figure out that relationship and love on them, and he will love on you.
Yeah, this seems like... Have you seen the cartoon version of Horton Hears a Who?
Yeah.
Where that kangaroo is like, Beezlebum, or something like Beezlebug. I don't know. They're trying to get to burn the thing.
It's bezelnut oil.
Bezelnut. Yeah. Bezelnut. Boom, boom. Bezelnut. Boom, boom. Anyway, so that's what it feels like here. Like some sort of old tyrant of a kangaroo woman.
Exactly.
So
and the Wickershams, who are the gorillas, are the ones who are going, let's drop them.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I mean, so a couple things, right? So if she's in the wrong, so you're gonna. I mean, I could say you're gonna have to let that go, but that's a little difficult, right? Because like, obviously, she's done something to harm you. So I mean, I assume you've attempted to reconcile. Like, she doesn't really describe the fact whether she's gone back and tried to. Okay.
Here's where I'm kind of at though. I don't think I can assume that she's tried to reconcile. Like, I really don't think I can.
Like, maybe she's just offended. And
I honestly think like this, the kind of person that says, "I'm depressed and angry, and I want some kind of revenge and to hurt her back." Like, that's the same kind of conversation you have with a 9-year-old.
That toy
was taken, and now they're going to take that toy from someone else to get revenge and to hurt them back. Like, that's ridiculous. How can you be a grown woman or man and make the decision that consciously you are willing to think the thought that I want revenge and to hurt them back? And not only think that, you're willing to seek out advice on how to correctly do that or if that is wrong or right.
Yeah, right.
If you need to figure out, based off of someone else's opinion of you, if wanting revenge against someone and to hurt them back is a justifiable place to be in, you're probably not a good spot to begin with. Now, practically speaking, speaking past that point, it sounds like she's hurt you. It sounds like you have a legitimate reason to be upset.
Agreed, yep.
If she's tossed you from the group and the group has abided by that, again, you're probably better off and probably should find
really
a better homeowners union to be a part of.
Would you say Bezelnut?
Bezelnut oil, yeah.
Bezelnut. Bum, bum, bum.
Exactly,
I gotta find that. Okay, go ahead.
First off, there's a good chance that you're better off. But if you're in this place where, like, you've been hurt by this person, a conversation may go further than you think it will. And maybe there's a long period of hurt from this person between your husband and them. And what you perceive as unharmful is very harmful to them. Obviously, they thought so because they weren't just trying to toss you out for no reason.
Well, yeah.
Or at least hopefully they weren't.
Yeah, because, I mean, here's the thing. If you live around a guy who's constantly making, cracking jokes or whatever.
Yeah, there's a chance you're annoyed too.
That's right. But maybe you've gotten used to it, right? Or like and because you know him well. You know his cracking wise ain't intended to be hurtful.
Right, exactly.
Right? But like, that doesn't mean someone else isn't gonna feel it that way. And so, you know what? Dude, grow up. Stop cracking wise. like, it's not appreciated. And she's obviously not taking it in the right way. And so, first of all, if the husband has caused her, I think you should apologize.
Right.
And the woman should go and try to reconcile on this thing. Because you're right, it could be that she's just, the question is like, is this perceived? That the group has turned against me? Because, I mean, this just really seems irrational to me. That this thing,
totally.
The group has turned against me.
Right.
And so.
That sounds like a bunch of children.
Yeah,
like
right.
Recess.
I wonder if it's a perception issue. She's like, oh, she's turned them against me. But like, no one's actually done that.
Right.
In fact, I would try that. If it doesn't work out, go talk to the other people in the group. And Boo was right. They give you the cold shoulder. They're weird. There's no reason to go after
that. Get out of Stepford now.
Yeah, there's just no reason. I mean, you're better off. So I would say try to handle it the best you can. Try to seek reconciliation. Talk to your husband. And like, here's the deal. Regardless of whether it was good natured or not, if he has harmed them, if she's harmed this woman and made her upset, he should apologize and try to alter his behavior.
Right.
Here's the deal. I've done that. I've done that before to my own kids. I've said something that I thought was funny. and frankly, maybe it was funny. But like, how they did not take it that way. It was hurtful to them. And like, I had to apologize to my children because even though I did not intend it, that isn't how it was heard. And like, I don't, what am I standing by saying, no, you're not hurt. It's funny. Like, what? To what value is that?
Right.
And so I said, look, I'm sorry. I don't mean to say things that are hurtful. And I need you to tell me if I do. I don't intend to do that.
My perception was different than yours. I apologize.
Yeah. And I'll work to do better. I recognize that was hurtful and I'll do my best. But you tell me if it's hurtful because I don't want to leave it that way.
Yeah.
And so I would, unless your guy's an idiot.
Right.
Or a dunce, like, yeah.
If your husband is caring enough as you say he is, if he's confronted with the fact that, hey, your jokes are a little bit too much. You should probably stop. Like, yeah. Okay.
And just because you help someone out financially does not give you the ability.
I love every time someone
to wisecrack.
Anytime someone brings up financial things, unless it is a specific seeking of advice about a financial situation, they're just bringing in financial perspectives to boast their own argument.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it is. Stop talking about what money you gave to somebody to make you the moral high ground. That is not how life works.
Agreed. All right, what is the secular?
So I'm going to give you what secular says from my memory because my phone just died. But ultimately, what secular offered was, yes, retaliation is probably not the right way to put this.
Okay.
Try and have a conversation with the person who is throwing you to the trash, the perceived trash, excuse me. Ultimately, right. Time is our most precious commodity. Any time spent aggravated against the person is time wasted within the relationship. If after the conversation you still haven't seen anything happen within the relationship with this gal or this gal and your husband, seek out socialization within that group individually versus the whole group. If she's trying to put you on the kibosh from the whole social group, maybe you should spend time with them individually if they'd be willing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yep. That's secular advice.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it. That's it. Right. We're going to call that a day?
I think we did all right, man.
Yeah, I think
we hashed out some serious and big stuff tonight.
Yeah, so now here's where we're ruined, Bova. We're ruined because now what am I going to talk about?
Right. We're going to have an article next week and we're going to be like, oh, crap, we talked about this.
Yeah, we straightened this thing out. We don't need to talk about this junk anymore.
We're just going to show up with that stamp that says love everybody.
Love everybody.
And we're just going to put that on the cameras and just keep saying love everybody over and over again. What and our show is going to lose all of its viewers.
What does that even mean, Bova? How do I love a man who loves a banjo?
What does love look like? I don't know. Maybe Jesus says the Samaritan is the one who loves him, and he's the one who takes care of him physically and spends time with him. And when he can't, he makes sure somebody else does.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that part. We'll get into that later.
Yeah, okay. Now that we can talk about. So maybe if I can leave you with this then. So what do reasonable Christians talk about, Bova? What do we do on a show like this then? Oh, if we're not going to bat around that junk anymore, I'm not saying that. We might.
We
it's late
will.
At night and it's sweaty in here.
That's truth.
So like, it's and so surveys are interesting to me. Yeah. So like,
I was going
to
say, sociologically, we're still going to be in those surveys.
Yeah. So, I mean, but how do you spend your time rightly?
I don't know. Maybe instead of being reactive, be proactive.
Yeah. How do we,
I think that, man, that's an easy answer too. That's read your Bible.
Yeah.
That's being proactive. Just because I'm not currently $100,000 in debt and I'm not divorced and I don't know what it's like to have 10 kids doesn't mean I can't read about that stuff in the Bible and figure out how to do that now.
Right. Well, and somebody is in that situation. How can I help?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal.
Be proactive in your faith. Stop reacting to everything that happens to you and take a little bit of time every day to figure out how things can go 10 years from now. I don't need to be on fire to know that it would probably suck to be on fire.
Right.
I might as well prepare for that and learn how to do stop, drop, and roll now.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and we were talking about this after the show last week. Maybe the broad thing to say is all right, if I believe good news changes the world, in what way should it be changing the world and how can I get in on it? Right? These are opportunities, man. I say, hey, look, the world's supposed to change. It's not supposed to be this way. Then change it.
Right.
Get in on that stuff. The good news changes the world. It transforms it. And as people see that, Jesus brought a tangible, I get it that his final kingdom establishment is the thing that people debate, right? But like, Jesus walked. I mean, the man was doing tangible things and expected tangible things out of his kingdom in addition, or as part of spiritual truths. Let me put it that way. And so look out of the world and say, what does good news do to change the world and how can I be a part of it? And how can I share it with other people and watch it change?
And never leave out Randy.
And quit ignoring Randy. He's got some Panama red in his basement. All right. Thanks for hanging out with us this evening. If you have, I don't know, you had a multitude of reactions to this kibosh of a show, shoot us an email, info@lifefromthepath.org, or hit us up on Twitter. It's @lifefromthepath. And on Facebook, hey, we're a few likes away from 500.
Woo!
Get
us there.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be all right if we could cross that bridge. I don't know what that does. Hey, we are getting close, though. I looked... we are about to hit a major YouTube milestone.
What are we hitting?
We're close to a million.
Yes.
Throw a party.
Yeah. Like, that'll be...
it'll be that creepy party where we have the picture of me sitting under a disco ball again. Do you remember that picture?
Yeah,
I was sitting in the corner underneath the disco ball alone at our 100,000 view party.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's...
I'll bring 10 disco balls.
I'm saying that's rough times. We're gonna have to rent out, get some disco balls or something.
Man, that's huge. Okay, yes. Support Live for the Path on all social media outlets.
Yeah, so where is that? Hold on. I was going to look and see where we're...
our actual number?
Yeah.
Hey, man, that'd be kind of... Do we get some from YouTube when that happens?
I don't think so.
Oh, come on. A million hits? They've got to send us something. Maybe it's a signed caps for sale. Because you and I both know that's like 350,000 of our views.
No, yeah, that's true. Almost everything's coming from the caps. Caps is where the big money is at.
Oh, man, we need new caps for sale, too.
Here we go, Machi. Let's see where we're at here. We are at, 842 subscribers.
Okay.
So we're close to 1,000.
Hey, that's cool, too.
I can't see the...
Hey, man, I subscribe to stuff, too, though, and I don't listen to any of them.
Caps for sale got 681,000 views.
Man, double what I thought.
Freaking Caps rocks it. All right, anyway, I'll take a look around and see what I can find out. But that's coming up. So, like, I don't know. If you engage in that type of thing, I mean, that would be great. Go ahead and get out there and like things and share things. And I'm going to post a new a Michael Leverton video. We have another one from when he was in the studio.
Yes.
And so I will post that so that we can you can share that around, and that'll be good.
Awesome.
And what else did I see? Oh, hey, man, Wayne Stewart's got his next book's coming out this week.
What?
He's got book number two, in the Zeb Dalton bookshelf there. And
nice.
Yeah, yeah, dig on that. I'll pick that up. You guys take a read of it.
Probably
and
get that
hook up with Wayne.
Any major outlet books are sold or online?
Yeah, you can definitely get it online. So I don't know if there's physical copies. I know it's definitely digital.
E-book
though.
In general.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. All right, that's it. I don't have any tunes to let you out today. That thing's not working right. So I'm just going to let you go. Boova's got the background music. Thanks for hanging out with us. Be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Life in the Path.